is really going to be special. It really is, because we're reading tonight where God brought two people together so I didn't have to die. Mm-hmm. And we're in a vision for you, and we're going to read about Bill W. and Dr. Bob in May of 1935. And isn't that great for these birthdays? Because there's no hope without God making that move. And we're on page 133, and I'm going to get to 153. I'm old. Stop it. I'm going to read to where it on 156, because I'm going to cover Bill and Bob. So. Ed's not here, so if I go too long, don't tell him. I don't know how long it'll take. It shouldn't take that long. I like to leave time for discussion. But it says, I'm going to start with, our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, now this paragraph is so powerful. They launched this book on the world tide, and this was their hope. Defeated drinkers, not just alcohol, but defeated drinkers will seize upon the book and follow its suggestions. Now, this was their hope. They had this book. Hopeless alcoholics, like Mark described the situation he was in 21 years ago, will seize upon it and follow its suggestions. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. And then these people who've risen to their feet will approach other sick ones, and the fellowship will begin. So this fellowship, the way they saw it, was people who were seizing upon this book and the program, taking it to other people, and then they would have fellowship, and they'd bring new people in, and they'd take them through the book and through the steps. And they call it havens for those who must find a way out. What a world. So the way out, they were going to call the book The Way Out. So this is a way out place. And I like to think of this as a place of salvation. Mm-hmm. And I was dying, and I've been saved. And the grace of God works through this book, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so it says in the chapter, Working with Others, you gathered an idea of how we approach and aid others to health. That's what we're trying to do. Suppose now that through you, several families have adopted this way of life. You will want to know more about how to proceed with these new people and these families. Remember, the families all went to the meetings in the beginning. And we're talking about 1938, this book was written. And so it was published early 39. Perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. Here is a brief account. And it says, years ago in 1935, so it was 3 years, they were 3.5 years sober when they wrote this book. Not many of them, but there were. One of our number, and this was Bill W., made a journey to a certain western city. Now, Bill W. sobered up in the hospital in Brooklyn in 1934 in December. He took the steps. He worked with Ebbie Thatcher. He went to the Oxford Group, and he followed the Oxford Group's steps. And he had that spiritual experience that you can read about in his story. And then he tried to work with alcoholics for 6 months, but did not succeed in getting anyone sober. But his wife said to him, Bill, you're sober. Mm-hmm. And that was important. It made an impression on him. She says, well, you may not have sobered anybody else up, but you're sober, Bill. Something's happened. And then Dr. Silkworth, he went to see him, and he told him he couldn't get anybody sober. And Bill said, well, we don't preach to these people about your spiritual experience. Tell them about your alcoholism. Tell them about your defeat and then what you did. Start with the sharing of your experience with someone else. And that's how they tell us to do it in Working with Others, right? From a business standpoint, he went to Akron Firestone Rubber, he was going to form a company and become very successful again. He had been very successful, but he'd lost everything in the stock market crash. And then with his alcoholism, I don't think he worked again till he never worked again. And he went into the hospital in 35, and then he worked with alcoholics. And I don't think he ever really worked at a job again the rest of his life. He devoted his whole life to AA. To me, he's not the same spiritual context, but God chose Bill W. for some reason. Just like Saul was chosen on the Damascus Road, God had a plan. He wanted this message to come to the world. And he chose Bill W. and the people put together, Reverend Shoemaker and all that, mm-hmm. to write this book. And like Gary said yesterday, this is a spiritual book from God. And it's a book about God. It's not about not drinking. So anyway, he went to Akron. He was really excited. This was going to be the deal. Now, read this next paragraph. It's fantastic. Had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially. Now, Bill's getting back into, remember, Bill wanted to be a success. That was his whole life, right? And it mattered to him what people thought of him. And remember, he said he had arrived, and he's the drive for success was one. And then he said the drive that was a success was going to be a boomerang that was going to come back to him. And that became his higher power. So Bill is 6 months sober, and he was doing the best he could. And he said, which at the time seemed vitally important. Now, vital means necessary for life. So Bill W., he was focusing now, God's moving away, and he's focusing, God, replacing God with worship of other things. Isn't that something we all do all day long? But this was a powerful thing. He really wanted this. But his venture wound up in a lawsuit and bogged down completely. The proceeding was shot through with much hard feeling and controversy. And remember, it says in I'm studying the Bible, so I get the word, verses. But I think in Romans it says, all things are God's purpose for good. Mm-hmm. Out of all things, there's something good. Right, Norm? And we may not see it. So he thought the worst thing that could ever happen was that he didn't get this deal. But that was the best thing that ever happened to Bill W. And because he would have been on his way. And it was shot with much hard feeling and controversy. So it was not good. He was not in a good place. Bitterly discouraged, which is not a good place for an alcoholic, right? No. Bitterly discouraged is not in the now with God. He found himself in a strange place. He was in the Mayflower Hotel, discredited. Now, a discredited alcoholic, it's the worst thing that could happen to us. Because to be discredited, then we live in this world where we want everybody to be watching us and cheering all the time, right? Because we're so wonderful. And to be discredited for us is almost like, you know, somebody giving us poison or shooting us. And he was almost broke. Still physically weak and sober, but a few months, he saw that his predicament was dangerous. So what was his predicament? His predicament was that he didn't get what he wanted. And he wasn't happy with the way things were going. And he was separated from God and back in self. And he was dangerous. So when he was dangerous, he wanted some relief. He wanted to talk with someone, but with whom? So here's what he did. So one dismal afternoon, he paced a hotel lobby wondering how his bill was to be paid. He's in the lobby. You can still find it. I think it's a care home now. But they still have, yeah. All right, we got the, at one end of the room was a glass directory of churches. At the other end was the bar. Think about it. God has a sense of humor, doesn't he? Down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. He could see a gay crowd inside. Now look at this line. In there, he would find companionship and release. Isn't that what alcohol did for us? Yes. Yes, he's in a dangerous place. The ease and comfort of alcohol, his mind's starting. So here's the next thing he thinks. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Now, don't they call alcohol liquid courage? Yes. Yeah, look at the words. But of course he couldn't drink. See, he said, right? He's standing there. He knows he can't drink. But why not just sit, hopefully, at the table? You see, he's getting like Jim. Mm-hmm. He's going to sell a car at the bar in the country, right? Why not just sit there? It's beginning to make sense. You see how relapse starts? A bottle of ginger ale before him. After all, this is great. He had not, had he not been sober 6 months now, mm-hmm. don't you think a lot of people who relapse say, well, I did it 3 months. I'll come back. I could do it any time, and things are going well, and I made too much of it, you know. It's not that hard. I'll just go back to AA. So I'll just drink tonight, right? Right? Just a few. I've known people like this. I probably was like that. It's amazing how we can believe it. And look at this. He's getting it worse. Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks. So now he's already counting the drinks. No more. Notice the dash. No more. He's believing this. But here is where I really think God made his move. He's in the lobby. He's thinking of drinking. He's in a bad place. But he had worked for 6 months with alcoholics. He had had this relationship with God. And here's what happened. Fear gripped him. Yes. He was afraid. And then look at this. He was on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious, and he knew that. The old insidious insanity, that first drink. Now look at this. With a shiver, he shivered. He shivered. He turned away. Turned away. Now, we talk about all the time, I can't turn away with Michael. I need God. And Mark talked about it today. Mark gets the power to have serenity through God. Mm-hmm. We have the power to turn away with God. I never have it on my own power. That's why I ask people when they celebrate, how did you let God do it? If we start taking credit for things, then we push God out. Now, I take credit for doing the things that I need to do to get to God. So I take credit for making the right choice, but the choice of how I live, it comes from God. Thin ice. Shiver, he turned away. We turn away. And remember on page 84, it says when we're disturbed, we turn our thoughts away to someone we can help, away from me. It doesn't say in 84 alcoholics, it just says anybody. Turn away from me. I have to do that. Walk down the lobby to the church directory. And he stood at the turning point. It's not in the book, but he was at the turning point. And he stood there, and he turned away. And he turned away with God. Now, I think it's so powerful. I get emotional when I think about it. I mean, I've read this a million times and done millions of meetings on it, but it's still powerful. And, you know, I'm looking at Jim. Jim's here today, and Mickey, because of this moment. Mm-hmm. Remember, God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. God can and will if you seek him. And this is maybe the greatest paragraph showing the power of God. Because Bill W., if you read his story, and he's at this place, he had no power in his own not to drink. And something had happened to this man. And then we do it today when we celebrate birthdays, and we hear Mark's story about 21 years ago and how he is today. You see the power of God. But what about his responsibilities, his family, and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? So he's starting to think of other people. He's getting better. Other alcoholics. There must be many in this town. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned. See that paragraph above, the three paragraphs, he's getting insane. He's separated from God. Sanity returned. He could see the truth about alcohol, and he thanked God. I need to remember that. I need to thank God when my sanity returns. I appreciate it, and I say, wow, thank you, God, but I don't do it enough. Selecting a church, whenever I change my mind about anything, I need to thank God. Change from being angry. He selected a church at random. Now, he couldn't find anybody to talk to, and he ended up with Reverend Thunk. Reverend Thunk, and he told him that he wanted to find an alcoholic to work with. So Reverend Thunk knew Henrietta Seiberling, and she was one of the Firestone daughter-in-laws, or sister or something. She was living at the Firestone Mansion complex. And she had been going to the Oxford Group, which came to Akron in 1935. 36, I think, or 37. And the Oxford group was fundamental, practicing fundamental Christianity, trying to have a God-centered life using their six steps and trying to follow the four absolutes, purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. And it came to Akron because there was his son, the Firestone's son, had been an alcoholic. And they sent someone to help him from the Oxford group. It was these were the wealthy people. Thomas Edison's right-hand man, his second-in-command, was in the Oxford group. And he went to Akron and worked with the Firestone's son. So the Firestone heir wanted to start an Oxford group. See how it all came together? And at the Oxford group, they had Henrietta Seibring, and she had a friend, Ann Smith, and Dr. Bob Smith, and they were going to the Oxford group. Now, Dr. Bob had been going, but he couldn't stay sober. Now, about 3 weeks before this day, Dr. Bob admitted to the Oxford group that he couldn't quit drinking. Now, they all knew that, but he finally admitted he just couldn't stop drinking. And Henrietta Seibring said she went home that night and she prayed that God would send someone to Dr. Smith. Now, think about that. Mm-hmm. And you can see, read all this in A Comes of Age and that other book. And I've heard this from people who talked about it. But so she prayed, and then Reverend Thunk said, I know Henrietta Seibring, give her a call. So he called Henrietta. It was a Saturday. And I didn't know this. I learned this recently. He actually went to her house, and he had dinner with her. Now, she called Ann Smith, and Ann Smith said, Dr. Bob is passed out on the floor with a potted plant that he had bought for Mother's Day, which was the next day. So I think Dr. Bob was a good candidate for this program. So she says, he's potted, it won't help him. So Henrietta asked Bill if he would be okay that night. He said he would. And Ann said, well, we'll bring him over. I'll get him over there tomorrow. I don't know how, but I'm going to get him over. And so they met on that Sunday. So he said, his call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town who, though formerly able and respected, and we're going to read Dr. Bob's nightmare when we finish this. I've not covered that before, but it's a powerful story. We'll read about him. Was then nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. And I wondered what the nadir of alcoholic despair is. What does that look like? And I believe that there's real no bottom to alcoholic despair. I think we can go to lower and lower and lower levels of despair and never give up. It was the usual situation. So I think they're trying to describe alcoholic despair. Home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damaged. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out. He had the hopeless and futility of life as he was living it. Now, he knew the scriptures, and he prayed and believed in God. But that can't solve our problem. Remember, we have to take the action, the steps to allow God to direct our life. And so he said he had a desperate before he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic. And you can ask yourself, what does it mean to be an alcoholic? So they got Dr. Bob over there. And Dr. Bob, you know, is desperate, dying, right? And they say there's somebody that wants to meet you and they can offer you some help, right? So you know what he told his wife? I'll give him 15 minutes. I mean, isn't it? I'm dying, right? But I'll spend 15 minutes. Yeah. And so they met, and then they met for 3 hours. And then if you read, it says Dr. Bob said he was the first person that understood his drinking, the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind. And I believe up to this point, Dr. Bob thought he was just a sinful person, and he didn't deserve God's love. Right. And he was evil and bad. And so it says, when our friend related his experience, then the man agreed that no amount of willpower he might muster would stop his drinking for long. A spiritual experience, he conceded, was absolutely necessary. He's conceding this. But look at this. The price seemed too high upon the basis subjected. So here's Dr. Bob. Remember Bill argued about God with Abby? He's dying in the kitchen, right? And here's Dr. Bob dying, and he concedes he needs a spiritual experience, but the price seemed too high. What's that line Norm likes to quote? Nobody likes the the leveling of their pride. He told how he lived, now listen to this, how he lived in constant fear. We talked about it yesterday. Fear. I had constant fear. Anybody else have constant fear? But when they came in here, it's Mark was described. I don't want to ever forget that. And Mark made a powerful point tonight. We never want to forget that moment of complete defeat and desperation. And this really good speaker, Father Leo, says that that's what the meetings should be. Keep the moment alive of our defeat so we never forget. He makes the analogy of the Holocaust. The Jewish people don't want the Holocaust to be forgotten because then it'll be repeated. And I think what happens to us when we drift away is we forget that moment of desperation. The ego rebuilds. And so I think that's why going to meetings, like Mark said, is essential. Because if I go to the meeting, I admit I'm an alcoholic. And I need to go to a place where other alcoholics are. And the fellowship, that's why the fellowship is so important. You can't do it without other people. He lived in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. Now, that's insane because I think everybody knew he was a drunk. You know? In fact, when they went to see AA number 3, and they went to the hospital, he asked the nurse if they had any alcoholic. She said, well, what about you, Bob? I mean, that's true. All right. I'm in a mood tonight. He had, of course, the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. Why, he argued, should he lose the remainder of his business? You see, he's in fear of losing money, losing his practice, only to bring still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood. He would do anything he said but that. So he had a limit. He'd go to any length but this. Being intrigued, however, he invited our friend to his home, so Bill W. went and lived with him. Sometime later, well, this was about 2 weeks, and just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. Now, what he did was he went to the AMA convention, and his wife told Bill not to let him go. He gets drunk every time, and he can barely make it home. So Bill says, well, you can't hide him from the world, right? So he went, he got drunk, he ended up at his nurse's house when he got to town. Then they finally got him home, and then it took several days to get him sober enough to be able to go to work. So it says he thought he was getting control, but he went on a roaring bender. For him, this was the spree that ended all sprees. He saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God might give him mastery. So I think now he's defeated. And you know, there's a powerful, the problems are resolved by God. We don't solve anything here. We let go of them and God solves them. And so we don't take credit for the changes. God changes us, but we let go of the old ways and our old ideas. So one morning he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his trouble has been. Now what actually happened was he had to go operate on somebody's rear end. Dr. Bob was a rear end doctor. So we had, excuse me, an asshole doctor, and we had a shyster lawyer. Bill W. was the biggest fast talker ever. This is the two people that God chose. Isn't it interesting? And people have tried to find out whose rear end he operated on. You know, there are people, but nobody knows. So he went, Bill gave him a beer in the car so that he wouldn't be too jittery. He did the operation, and he did tell them he finished the operation at noon. And then he didn't come home. So they thought something bad was happening. And then it says here, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared. Now that's a powerful word. I circuited. I hadn't seen it before. What his trouble had been. He feared these people because he had been dishonest with them, and he's making his amends, so he'll lose his fear of people, right? He found himself surprisingly well received and learned that many knew of his drinking. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he had hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of business. So do you think the eighth and ninth steps are important?
Absolutely.
At midnight, he came home exhausted but very happy. He has not had a drink since. Doesn't it make you emotional? Mm-hmm. To think about this, because he died in 1951, and he was, I think he was 50 when he got sober, and he died of pancreas cancer in 1951. He has not had a drink since, and as we shall see, he now means a great deal to his community, and the major liabilities of 30 years of hard drinking have been repaired in four. Good stuff. I think we'll stop right there. The next part of this is how we go to how they went to AA number three, and then about the vision of the fellowship. I don't know about you, but it's powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. So I like to call it the hand of God. What else can it be, right, Norm? Anyway, congratulations again to the birthdays. You're both special in my life, and I'll open it up.